It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Sozi!
No, that's Matthew Sozi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sozi.
It's Hansbrough ahead to Ford. Now to McLaubert.
Oh, he got fouled.
Hibbert underneath. Look out, Dwayne Wade. Hibbert got the field goal and the foul.
The Pacers.
No, he did. No, the big fella did.
Forget it. The Pacers win in Southern California.
Well, I got to tell you, boy, that's throwing it down with authority by Josh McRoberts.
Mike Dunleavy tips it in at the buzzer. Dante Jones again. Three-point shot. It's Dante Jones time.
Rush.
Step back jumper to win it.
Yes, sir.
Three
yes, sir.
Of a second.
Little Pacers celebration music for you there.
I'm sorry, that's all the time we have for this week. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Tito?
Oh, yeah.
Tito Puente?
Oh, yeah.
Very nice. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. This show is available as a podcast, and you can also get it on iTunes.
Yep.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you, Melissa.
Behind the board, the optimist, apparently, of the group.
That's right.
The man who comes up with, that was longer than the Tommy Wiseau interview.
It's fine.
You're happy that a below 500 team is in the playoffs.
So happy.
That's the...
I've been saying it for years, and they're finally in.
After 5 years.
5 years.
So congratulations.
They have turned the corner.
Right,
yes.
And now they're just waiting to see which team's going to trounce him in the first round.
Probably going to be Chicago.
Kobe Slagle, ladies
hello.
And gentlemen.
Also like to point out that you can check out our blog at filmsociology.tumblr.com. And also I'd like to make it known to the audience. I talked to some people in the building, they don't realize that we're doing this live.
People in our own building.
Yeah.
Do they handle money?
The clown whose office is right next to mine didn't know that we do this live.
Really?
Yep. Come on, Ben.
Oh, man. But he's been in here.
I know. Must have thought we was recording it.
My goodness.
Yep.
Well, but guess, just by the way, folks, it's also Silent Web Week.
It is Silent Web Week at WFYI.org. Silent Web Weekend Sunday. Make a pledge online. And you could be entered to win an Apple iPad 2. Pledges are encouraged, but not required. Details online at WFYI.org.
And this is music from our promos.
That's right. Consistency,
Tito.
Matt.
Love Tito Puente. That's right. Character. Characters. Fundamentals. Yes. So that's cool. And, of course, yeah, our spring membership drive begins
Monday.
It begins on Monday, so be afraid. Be very afraid. Now, we have a very special guest sitting in with us. She has her own intro music. You should know this by now, and if you don't, check this out.
We are Sexbomb! 1, 2, 3, 4! We are
Sexbomb! 1, 2, 3, 4! We are Sexbomb, and we're here to make you think about death and get sad and stuff!
We are Sexbomb. We are here to make money and sell out and stuff.
1, 2, 3, 4!
Kim!
We are Sexbomb, and we are here to watch Scott Pilgrim kick your teeth in! 1, 2, 3, 4!
Especially Matthew Sozi, I'm going to be putting down my Xbox and my energy drinks to review a mature movie.
Gina Wagner, Haunted Flower. Hello, dear.
That's right. I am Gina Wagner from HauntedFlower.com, and I'm a guest on Film Sociology. 1, 2, 3, 4.
And on top of that, when she is on wheels, she's known as Jackie Bauer.
That's right.
And you ladies have a match tomorrow night.
Yes,
if you are not doing anything, which you should drop everything you were going to be doing anyway and come, Saturday night, 6 p.m. is the starting time for the Circle City Derby Girls' first opening bout of the season.
And who will you be trouncing like they're treating like the Indiana Pacers?
Oh, well, it's a doubleheader. First game is against the Lansing Derby Vixens, and the second game is against Southern Illinois. It's going to be awesome.
Wow. This is Lukies and Spartan area. Okay.
And I hear Spartan area.
As I got your Spartan area right here. Now, I heard, is it official about what you were saying off air? Now that I'm making it official on air. Halftime?
Oh, yes. And we're going to have two halftime performances of full contact musical chairs. And this is all going down at the Forum at Fisher's on 126th Street behind the YMCA.
And selling slacks out of the trunk of the car. That's cool.
But you should totally buy your tickets today online because you can get them for $10 in advance at brownpapertickets.com or at the door for $15.
All right. And, of course, Dan's in the spouse chair.
Yeah. Hi, Dan.
How's it going, Dan? Well, quite a few movies opened. And being the of Gina of the IFJA, she just handled all of them.
I represented this week.
You did represent this week because I full disclosure, my daughter, the kids' film correspondent, and I are in rehearsals for a play, which opens in May, King and I. And I was able to see one. So we'll start with the one that both you and I saw, and then you just take the reins for the other films. My goodness.
Awesome.
Okay. Now, opening today is a remake of the 1981 comedy Arthur. Of course, a little background for those who weren't born yet.
That was BC.
Shut up, Kobe. the original one starred Dudley Moore as a drunken playboy who is forced to get married even though he doesn't want to. He falls in love with a common lady. John Gielgud played his butler. Moore got an Oscar nomination for his performance. Gielgud won a Supporting Actor Award for his performance, and well-deserved. Well, they've updated it, and this time it's Russell Brand as Arthur and playing the part of Hobson. Will you calm down, president of the Katy Perry fan club? Over the age of 16. Russell Brand plays Arthur. Dame, Academy Award winning Helen Mirren plays Hobson, the nanny. And same storyline. You know, doesn't want to get married. He does fall in love, but it's not with the woman he's supposed to. So here's some audio.
Arthur, get in the car.
No.
Bitterman, open the door.
Bitterman, close that door.
Get in the car.
Not you, Bitterman.
Who are you people?
I'm his nanny.
I'm Bitterman.
Morning, Arthur.
Hello, Hobson.
Say goodbye to your friends now, Arthur.
Meet me.
Ow! Hobson!
Get on the horse.
No, it's okay.
Maybe Daddy can help?
Let me help. Ow! But you're not qualified! That was no trouble.
You're going to marry Susan Johnson.
Hello, Arthur.
Ah! Mm. What was that?
French kiss.
Really? Because the French always surrender. That was decidedly German.
Your mother will see you now.
Arthur, to what do I owe the pleasure?
I don't want to marry Susan.
Fine. You are cut off.
Cut off from that.
The money.
I think I could live without the money. I am a grown man and I shall get a job to prove it. Don't let that undermine what I just said.
We should not get married.
It's a business partnership.
We don't have anything in common.
You love horses.
I don't trust them. Their shoes are permanent. Who makes that kind of a commitment
we
to
get
a shoe?
Do you know how to use Excel?
No.
PowerPoint?
No.
Outlook?
Generally positive. You know, I mean, I have down days like anyone, but... Let me look after you for a change. How does this bag of tea work?
Be careful. It's going to be very, very...
God, no!
Hot.
Running from yourself, Arthur.
I wish I was, because I'd let me get away. Put this on, please. Say, wash your winky.
Wash your winky.
Could you do Chewy?
Hobson,
we're going to hang out together.
I've never hung out in my life, and I'm not going to start tonight.
Hobson!
He's weak. He's stronger than you think.
You used to say, Arthur, you can do anything under the sun.
I never spoke like that.
It was a bit like that.
Do you like it?
You're on the bag, Gary.
My bed is made of magnets.
Get me out of here!
At least something in this room is attracted to you.
Bitterman?
Why are you shaving?
Because Robin doesn't have a beard.
I can see your tummy.
Okay, as I learned on Facebook after watching this, and yeah, I took the film, kids' film correspondent who really enjoyed herself. There are a number of Arthur purists out there, as I found out, and it seemed a little more rabid than I had expected. Like it was Star Trek or Lord of the Rings or something at Star Wars. So I was kind of I enjoyed the first Arthur a great deal and still remember it fondly. That being said, this didn't bother me. I think this is going to bother a lot of people.
Are you taking the Chris Lloyd approach here?
It's not hella bad. Now, and I'll say this because on paper it looks like just another remake, but it's got a couple things going for it. One, I think Brand is the right choice for this film because he's able to make fun of his weird bad boy persona that Kobe, I know, has white heat hate over. Really? Like piston hate? Piston hatred? You don't get him.
No, I can't.
This is like Ashton Kutcher bad.
Yes.
Okay.
I just can't stand him.
But you might be seeing this film, which would be a huge step for you.
I might be a friend from high school and I, my friend Lauren, might be going to see this.
You're
going to
blame this on Lauren, aren't you?
No! Maybe going to see this tomorrow or Your Highness.
We know you want to see that.
I want to see. I'm hoping we go see Your Highness, but I'm going to look past Russell Brand to spend time with a friend.
Okay, well,
that's what's going on there.
I think he uses his celebrity persona really well in this, and of course, it's got Helen Mirren, who's rock solid. The scenes they have together are a lot of fun. I personally kind of wish there were more of them. It's just not Oscar material because it's not John Gielgud and it's not 30 years ago. The only other plot notes for those who are rabid Arthur purists is the fiance, this time played by Jennifer Garner, is much more aggressive. She is her character in the first Susan Johnson, the original film, real milquetoast, kind of a doormat. And so there's an extra pressure, almost a screwball comedy aspect of it, especially when in Arthur's room with the big bed of,
magnets,
yes. And because it's 2011, Arthur goes to AA. So there is that aspect that I guess you can't avoid it. It's almost like a PG-13 King speech. Not necessary, but I guess if it has to be done. So
it's almost like if they didn't, they'd be endorsing it.
Well,
like, kids will see this movie and think, if I go out and drink, I'll have a Batmobile. And that's
right.
Not the case at all.
And, well, 30 years ago, if you drank, you got a lot of money in Liza Minnelli. 1981 Liza Minnelli, not today. Anyway,
I'm not saying
a whole hell of
anything.
A lot either, right? Okay. Well, in real life, Dudley Moore dated Susan Anton. That's not bad.
No.
That's pretty.
No.
That's phenomenal.
That is phenomenal.
So anyway, when it comes to this, I'm not offended by this. It's decent. I think it's kind of, if you must, I guess, go to a matinee. There are better remakes and like True Grit, and there are worse remakes like the rest of them. So, Gina, your thoughts?
I thought this one was so much fun.
Now,
throughout.
Have you seen the original, if you don't mind me asking?
No, I didn't.
That's okay. It's all right. You were too busy not Xboxing.
Yep. That's right.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was doing.
Exactly. So, no, go ahead. Go ahead.
I really love this. Like, what I keep saying that I love about Russell Brand is that his comedy seems almost accidental. Like, words just kind of tumble out of his mouth and they're funny. Without him even meaning to, even though you know he is. It's just really, really charming, and I really like the guy. I don't know what it is about him that's just so charming. And the ending came really easily, I thought. It just is like,
oh, sure.
Oh, okay, everything, happy, happy,
well,
rainbows.
Well, it's supposed to, yeah.
Yeah, I thought we could have learned a little bit more, but I was okay with that because I laughed a lot throughout, and I really loved Helen Mirren, too. They were so good together.
We do for all sorts of reasons.
Well,
so.
Yeah, they were great. It was, mm-hmm. I mean, that was awesome casting right there for both of them.
Yeah, I think it was a really cool role. And the film, I don't think, is going to come here. We're going to have to wait till it comes out on DVD. But these two also worked together in Julie Taymor's film version of The Tempest.
Oh, I didn't know Russell Brand was in that. I knew
yes.
Helen Mirren.
Helen Mirren plays Prospera. He is one of the kind of clownish soldiers
along with
Alfred Molina.
Oh.
So I'm intrigued. So now there's the fascination of, can Russell Brand do Shakespeare? And I can tell you with this Julie Taymor project, not nearly as many injuries.
Ah.
One would hope. you know, shooting in Hawaii as opposed to not people falling from a cable 30 feet in New York City. Anyway, yeah, I think it's definitely worth a matinee. Kobe, I think if you go, you can go to a matinee.
Yes.
You might enjoy it.
Go.
But Jennifer Garner's in it.
This is the one, yeah. I'm recommending.
Yeah, and Greta Gerwig's in it as well. She's the nice girl. And
she's all hearts and sunshine.
And I want to know the gene pool where Nick Nolte is Jennifer Garner's dad.
You're right.
He's scary.
He's supposed to be scary.
So scary. I really thought Russell Brand was going to lose something.
He's like Gary Busey with medicine. he's kind of demented in his own way, but he keeps it in check.
Are you recommending this?
That
over...
was in check?
Yes.
Gina, are you saying you're recommending this over Kenny Powers?
If given the choice of what I would go see again, I would see Arthur again over Your Highness.
Well, there you go. All right, so Kobe, play it.
Gina, thanks this.
Now that was a good movie.
Matt, yeah. Thanks this.
Yeah, it's not a hell of a
I was with Gina on that one, you dope.
Yeah,
you're
dope.
Being difficult. Jeez.
Everybody, you can't see it right now, but Gina has a shirt on that says you had me at Jell-O.
And there's two
And the Jell-O is smiling at each other.
The two blobs of Jell-O are looking at each other with hearts aflutter.
Yep.
Dan's wearing Save Ferris.
It's
I'm in black.
There are so many
Save
awesome
Ferris
going
is
on.
Available at hauntedflower.com, which I hear is an amazing online t-shirt store full of nerdy apparel for everyone.
When you're done pledging
it.
At WFYI.org.
That's right. as soon as you're done making your pledge.
We could do that. We do this all day long. We've been doing this long before you ever came around. Now, that being said, we move into Your Highness, which is apparently, from what we've seen in the trailers, the King Arthur version of Pineapple Express. It's co-written by Danny McBride. It's written by David Gordon
Green.
Green, thank you. I'm reading the paper for no reason. Yeah. David Gordon Green, and of course you have James Franco, Danny McBride. They're knights. Well, one's a knight and the other's a louse, I assume, and there's Zoe Deschanel and there's Natalie Portman. Love both versions of the trailer for this film. Mm-hmm. So Gina, you saw it. You tell us what you think. It's a knight rescue movie. But
yes.
More.
We've got the Pineapple Express gang back together, clearly. James Franco and Danny McBride seem to work pretty well together as brothers questing. Danny McBride's the lazy one.
Do we get to see their parents to see how that happened?
Not really. You don't really spend much time with the parents at all.
We just have to guess.
Yeah, it's just a ridiculous kind of spoof fantasy movie. It's like Robin Hood Men in Tights, but a lot more R-rated. You know, there's
because
lots of
it is R-rated.
Swearing, drugs.
And funnier.
I mean, they go to visit a wise wizard who might have been molesting one of them as a child. I mean, it's crazy.
Wow.
The movie definitely improves when Natalie Portman shows up and starts to slay monsters and look hot. And she can really hold a gaze really well
over
a fire.
You think I was a ventriloquist over here? I'm sorry, go on.
No, but seriously, she adds so much to the movie when she shows up because she takes it very seriously and she's on a quest too, and
can beat up a guy or two.
Yes, more than they can.
Cool.
Yep. And you know, it's just all ridiculous, and there were parts of it that maybe went on a little bit longer than I needed them to, but otherwise, you know, this is just something. It's ridiculous, and you don't go in expecting much of anything, and that's how you would enjoy it.
Is this sillier than Pineapple Express?
I would say sillier.
Ooh. That's got to be in the ad campaign. Uh-huh. Gina Wagner says sillier than Pineapple Express.
Well, it's kind of funny. Like, they're trying to talk to each other as if they're in one of those fantasy movies, but then they're just dropping F-bombs everywhere and...
That happens.
Stuff.
That happens. I kind of remember the sword and sandal movies of the early 80s, like the original Clash of the Titans, Dragon Slayer, Sword and Sorcerer, and yeah, those were all that fun.
Oh, there's a whole village of naked women in a forest.
Kobe, you're going to be campaigning for that one even more now. Come on, I hear it's funny.
So of course, Danny McBride's like, oh, of course, it's not a trap. I must go off with that yonder wench.
So it's a little bit of the Castle Anthrax from Monty Python and the Holy Grail, only naked.
Not quite as innocent as the castle.
Sweet.
They were in robes. These
yes, they
ladies
were.
Are not in anything.
Because it's R-rated. It's it's much more R-rated, as you said.
Yes, much more.
It's because it's R-rated.
It's like, I'm sorry. No, it's when Emma says, it's like Recess. No, honey, it is Recess. All right, Kobe, this is apparently how Gina feels Your Highness.
This is what I'm getting.
Yeah?
I think it's overrated.
You're being difficult.
That's what I got from
you. Also opening today, Soul Surfer.
Yeah.
True story of a girl, female surfer who loses an arm and goes back in the water. Not to retrieve it, but goes back in the water.
No, but they do find the shark. But by then, it's too late for the arm.
Bummer.
Yes, so,
tell us about this one.
True story of Bethany Hamilton, a young girl surfer, played by Anna Sophia Robb, whom I thought this was great casting because this little girl made me cry in Bridge to Terabithia.
Oh,
so she's a little emotional blonde girl.
She was also Violet Beauregard in Charlie's Chaplin, so she's grown up. Oh my, okay.
She's had lots of good roles for her. But anyway, Helen Hunt and Dennis Quaid play the parents.
Nice
the
gene
very
pool there.
Supportive parents.
A lot of hand
go
wringing.
Back and forth over. No, if she doesn't want to surf, we shouldn't let her surf. No, we have to keep encouraging her to surf. Otherwise, what will she do?
That was Helen, right?
No.
No, the stern voice is the stern, solid voice is Dennis. I'm sorry.
But yeah, I mean, she does an excellent job. And Carrie Underwood is the Christian youth group leader.
Of course she is.
Who, oh my gosh, she gets to sing in the beginning.
No.
At Beach Church.
Nuh-uh.
Like Frankie, Our Lady of Frankie and Annette.
Like, seriously, they have Beach Church. If, you know, she just gets off her surfboard, puts on a sundress, and runs over to church where they have folding chairs.
That is
and
not
at
the beginning of the movie.
Seriously, it's the beginning of the movie. We have Beach Church.
I want to see a Beach Church.
That'll happen.
Apparently it has happened.
Yeah.
It's in California.
Why else would they put it in a movie?
California. Right, exactly. California, Hawaii.
Yeah.
Maybe Oregon. Maybe.
Yeah. Basically, cool. I really can't have any big complaints over it. It's just some of it was little cheesy. Really sentimental.
Like enough cheese to put on a slice of apple pie?
There's a quote I could share with you. If you'd like to hear.
Oh, please do.
I'm sorry. Do we need a 7-second delay when you set it up like that?
No. It's not bad. It's just like a reporter asks her, like, if you could have changed it and not having your arm bitten off by a shark, would you? And I might be paraphrasing it, but she basically says, no, because now I can embrace more people with one arm than I ever could have with two.
Okay. Wow.
That's your, yeah.
And then there's a rainbow at the end of the credits.
Hit the audio, Kobe.
Okay.
I think it's overrated.
I believe this is also a truly moving picture.
And if it wasn't, it should be. Okay. Because Born to be Wild got to be a truly moving picture.
Ah,
as well.
That's right. Also, this is because I talked with Greg Mintz down the road on AM, opening on IMAX in 3D, the documentary Born to be Wild, and it's not about the band Steppenwolf.
Good. No, it's just very simple story about one woman who raises orangutans, baby orphan orangutans, whose parents are gone, and raises them until they're old enough to go into the wild.
Another woman
does the same thing with elephants. And so they save baby animals, and then they're better, and they can go and be wild. It's cute.
Wow, can we get a tissue over here?
All I'm going to say is, you know, it's only 40 minutes long, but super cute.
Okay.
So if you're going to see an IMAX movie, I would see this one because they're cute.
They're cute little cuddly animals
who can
squash you if you're near an elephant.
Well, in the very beginning, one of them, I swear, looks just like Dumbo. There's this, like, blue-eyed elephant that, like, goes into the water and then spits water everywhere, and it's just like, oh.
Is that a 3D effect?
Water coming straight at me
monkeys,
from an elephant.
Monkeys fleeing dung at each other? Is that 3D? No.
No,
that's not in there? Okay.
But the elephants roll around in the red clay.
The Freddie Hubbard album?
No, my.
That's a great album. Shut up.
You're stealing the cuteness thunder.
I'm not stealing the cuteness thunder. Freddie Hubbard was a cute... Nah, anyway. Okay.
But yeah, that's all that I got about that movie.
And Morgan Freeman narrated it?
Yes, Morgan Freeman, the narrator.
That's his next film title right there. And also in theaters is... Wow, he's gone from costume dramas to action movies, director Joe Wright, who gave us Pride and Prejudice and Atonement, and he also gave us The Soloist, and now he has Hannah, which, if I remember reading correctly, you called Salt Jr.
Yeah, I've nicknamed this Salt Jr.
So tell us about Hannah.
Well,
but not her sister.
Unfortunately, I cannot pronounce her name, the girl who plays her. I say it wrong.
The Atonement Girl.
We'll call her Miss Lovely Bones.
Yeah, she was also in The Lovely Bones as the dead teenager who, yeah.
Yeah, anyhow, she's been raised forest by Father Eric Bana all her life. Now she's 16, and she's ready to carry out her job as an assassin against Cate Blanchett.
Wait, a 16-year-old assassin versus Cate Blanchett?
Yes.
Wow.
Well, you'll find out throughout the movie that she has things that will work in her favor, apparently, genetically.
I see. Bigger, faster, stronger.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Basically. I really enjoyed this. I really liked the Chemical Brothers soundtrack going on in the background. And there were a lot of really great action scenes where she's just tearing people up, man. She's mm-hmm. just, and there are really cool sets. Like, they go to this grim fairy tale theme park. And it's really, like, crazy.
Where's that?
Apparently, Germany.
Okay, I was like, that's not around here.
Yeah, but that would make sense in Berlin. But yeah, I really liked it. And if you wanted to see a thriller this weekend, I would really recommend it for that. My only complaint is it felt long. Like, I don't think it needed to be 2 hours because so much of it was just filming her running.
Right.
And I'm really happy she's such a good runner. But I didn't need to see her running so much. Running through the desert. Running
like
the
Run Lola Run running.
Awesome.
Run Lola Run?
Yeah.
It is.
It is
very
awesome.
Good.
I want to see her count.
Mm-hmm. You actually see something every now and then. All right. Yeah. So she could be on the all-action film track team, is what you're saying.
I liked it. I thought it was cool because she looks so innocent, and she's just, you know, so sweet, and they're like, oh, we're going to help you. No, she's just going to hurt you now.
Like Jackie Bauer.
Yeah. Take you out.
Okay. Well, what do you think? Here's what she thinks about that, right, Cobe?
Yep. Now that was a good movie.
And then I got that one.
You got that one. And then there was one more. It was one of the foreign films.
Gods and Men.
One of the best foreign film nominees, I believe.
Yes,
a bunch of
French
monks who are harassed by terrorists.
Yes. It takes place in Algeria. Basically, these monks are in danger. They're being held at gunpoint sometimes. People are dying everywhere, and they decide they're not going to leave their post. They're going to stay at their monastery. And so while I found that moving and admirable, you know, I could get behind the characters. That doesn't change the fact that it's boring.
Oh.
And you might be falling asleep.
Did you fall asleep?
Like in church.
Not beach church.
No.
This is not beach church.
No, that
this is
happen.
Like straight up very
straight up pews.
Yeah, just
collection plates.
Well, you get to see the monks day to day, very quietly gardening.
Yes, they're
quietly
monks.
Praying. I got it, and I was like, this is nice, this setup that we're getting to experience their lives. But then, like, it felt like 3 hours later. Seriously? Like, we're still singing, and I don't know. They were putting me to sleep.
Apparently you wanted a Thelonious monk.
Wow.
I always
do. You are in rare form today, man.
Thank you.
I'm just saying. It's snoozable. And it wasn't just me. It's not because of me and the
snoozable
energy drinks.
I didn't say a thing. Wasn't going to say a thing.
Chris Lloyd and Ed are on my side. They were both there at that screening.
Okay, you can check out those reviews as well. Kobe, I think we're going to go straight into the interview because it'll be a break for us.
Wait a minute.
But
okay.
Stuart McLean, okay. just a note, folks, Stuart McLean in the Vinyl Cafe. Thank you, Gina, for covering the entire movie spectrum this week.
You are welcome.
Stuart McLean and the Vinyl Cafe are going to be at the Hilbert Circle Theater Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Tickets are still available. And for those who listen Saturday nights on WFYI 90.1, tomorrow will be the second ever Canadian Blues House Party.
Yeah.
That's right. Canadian Blues. Probably play more Canadian Blues tomorrow night than a lot of radio stations in Canada. I'm proud of that. But I got to talk to Stuart this week about the show that's coming to the Hilbert Circle Theater and about the history of Canadian cinema because, well, you need that kind of information here at Film Sociology. So if Kobe's done texting.
I'm making a note for an audio thing.
Great. I'll make you Google Natalie Wood later. But here is my chat with the Vinyl Cafe host, Stuart McLean. Joining me on Film Sociology is the creator, the writer, the host, the man who is the Vinyl Cafe, Stuart McLean. He is going to be at the Hilbert Circle Theater Sunday afternoon at 2:30. How you doing, Stuart?
I'm very well. Thank you very much.
Good to have you back in town. This will be your second time in Indianapolis, and we heard you're going to be taping this time.
Yeah, we're taping in Indianapolis and in Cleveland on this tour, which is the first time we've ever toured taped in the state. So it's a bit of a deal for us.
Well, we appreciate being a part of that deal. Why don't you tell us a little bit about at least some of the music and maybe a sample of the stories that are going to be done on Sunday?
We've got Luke Doucette and his wife, Melissa McClellan, touring with us. They're just back off the Sarah McLachlan North American tour. And before that, Melissa had been on the Lilith Fair. I think they've both been on Lilith Fair. They're both... what can I say about them? She's an amazing singer. She's just one of the great young singers in the country right now. And Luke is a fabulous guitar player. He's been playing with Sarah for 20 years as her guitarist. So they're great. Both of them are terrific musicians, and I'm really enjoying listening to them. Stories, we got three stories. We've got two brand new Dave and Morley stories and an old favorite to boot. The new ones. Let me see. One of them, Dave visits an old friend in a hospital and decides the guy needs to go for a walk, and so he busts them out of hospital and chaos ensues. And in the other one, Morley is clean. It's springtime, and Morley's down in the basement cleaning out the just kind of giving the house a haircut, trying to clean things up a bit, and she finds an old doll in the basement that she doesn't remember, and that sends them both off, both Dave and Morley off on a circuitous path through their memories, trying to figure out where this doll came from and who it might have belonged to.
Hey, I was curious, do you get people yelling story requests at your shows?
Yeah, sometimes, especially the turkey story is the one they like the most. If I give people a chance, they'll be asking for that one.
And then you have a 4-hour show.
We have about a, yeah, exactly.
Well, going back a little bit, I was curious, do you remember the name of the movie theater in your neighborhood growing up? Do you remember going to?
Oh, yeah, there was the Kent Theater and the Avenue Theater. The Avenue Theater, which had rumored to have a private screening room where you could have birthday parties, but I was never, I guess it was a corral where they'd put kids in where they wouldn't, mess up with everybody else. But I never got to it. But in Montreal, actually, film wasn't a big deal for kids because there was a horrible fire in Montreal in a theater in the 1920s where 75 kids at a matinee were killed, were suffocated mostly trying to get out. It was one of those awful events where the doors opened in instead of out and an exit was barred. And in fact, that fire was key for making across North America, for making it imperative to have exit doors open outwards instead of inwards.
I see.
And in a complicated and political development, the Roman Catholic Church, which didn't like the idea of popular film and which more or less controlled Quebec, the province of Quebec, the French-speaking province of Quebec, used the disaster to get what something that it had been trying to get for a long time, which was to keep kids out of theaters. So for close to 40 years, from the 20s up until the 60s, if you were under 16, you couldn't get into a movie theater in Montreal, where I grew up. Well, there was no Saturday matinees for kids. It was just they finally brought in at some point in the early 60s, they decided it would be okay to have family films, and kids could attend a matinee if their parents came with them. And I think the very first movie I saw was a Walt Disney nature film. It was the content was very carefully looked at before kids were allowed in. It was Perry the Squirrel, which was I have to say, although I was very excited to be going to my first movie in a theater, was a bit of a disappointment because it wasn't Sinbad the Sailor Man or Davy Crockett or some of these other adventures I'd seen advertised in the movie pages. And there you go.
It seems like it was even stricter than the Motion Picture Association of America here in the States.
Oh, it was totally. I mean, you just couldn't go into a theater. That was it. You were just not allowed in.
Now, was there a lot of, like, Sunday or Saturday afternoon television, like movies on TV?
Not that I remember, which might have been a good thing, you know, because television only really arrived in Canada. Our first TV was for the coronation. When Queen Elizabeth was coronated, people sort of went out and bought television sets so they could see that. But really, people didn't have TVs until the late 50s. So we were told just to go out and play and go and play.
Boy, and longer attention spans.
Well, I've got a friend. You're right about that. I have a friend who works in television news who on his desk has a document where he every year he monitors and keeps track of the average length of clips in news pieces. And I think when he started, the clip being the interview section of the mm-hmm. of the piece where the reporter would throws to the politician who has something to say or whatever, or the grieving widow or whoever you got in the story. And he said in the 60s they used to be 30 to 40 seconds long, and now they're under 10 seconds, these clips. So everything has to move so much faster today.
Now, did you guys have a lot of – were there a lot of drive-ins in Canada?
Now, that's funny you should ask that. I was in Austin, Texas last week. And I went to an urban drive-in in the middle of downtown Austin. A drive-in in a real seedy part of town, where room for 13 cars, and but with all vintage equipment, vintage hookups, and we sat in our car and watched Beach Blanket Bingo.
Oh my!
And ate vintage candy in this industrial part of Austin. It was fabulous. No, going to a drive-in was always my great desire. Because once again, you weren't allowed to go to those. But I finally had my dream come true in Austin last week.
One of the things that's always been noted is it seems like the U.S. film industry has always overshadowed a lot of going on of what was happening up in Canada. When did that begin?
Well, the Canadian film industry kind of began during World War II. A guy by the name of David Grierson, there were films made before that, but a guy by the name of David Grierson was famously brought over from England to set up the National Film Board of Canada.
Which was formed in 1939.
And it was begun as a kind of a propaganda arm, really. It was there to produce films to encourage patriotism during World War II. But it very quickly, after the war, morphed into this hotbed of creativity and became, because of Grierson, famous for its, for a documentary film is what it first became known as, and then for animation. The NFB was made a lot of Oscar-winning animated shorts and a lot of great documentaries, and Canada and Canadians have had a long history of being very strong in both those things, and have peopled a lot of American documentary shows over the years. Have provided the talent for that, but we've never really developed in the way that America or even say Australia has a strong feature film industry. We've turned in of our own with a strong Canadian identity. We've ended up becoming a service industry. We're known as Hollywood North,
right.
And a lot of American productions will come to Canada and work with Canadian studios, with Canadian on Canadian lots, and Canadian with Canadian directors, actors, whatever. But they are largely American-driven films. For a while, they came up because the dollar was the Canadian dollar was lower than the American, so it was economic for people to come to Canada to shoot films. And in the Canadian side, it was thought of as a way we could develop the industry, but the Canadian industry never developed. We're not telling our own stories.
Right.
We're telling your stories more than ours.
Well, I remember reading a piece on how there were two films that were an example of that, of not showing the Canadian identity, even though it was a massive amount of Canadian work. One was Porky's, directed by Bob. I think Bob Clark directed that,
mm-hmm.
and Meatballs with Bill Murray. And I think they said the only Canadian identity was a Canadiens jersey on a wall.
Well, and that's the problem is we don't have distribution. It's very interesting. The music business, we're a small country. I mean, we're a huge country, but we're small geographically, but our population is small. And the music business, the government policy, public policy became, they recognized that in order to build a Canadian music industry, they had to support it. And the way they supported it is it became law. There was legislation made that radio stations in Canada had to play a certain amount of Canadian content.
Mm-hmm.
And they grumbled about this at the beginning. At first it was 25. It ranges between 25 to 50% Canadian content music, depending on the type of station and the type of music. And the definition of what Canadian music is fairly broad. It has to have a certain component of either recorded in Canada, written in Canada, performed by Canadian musicians, sung by a Canadian singer. You don't have to hit all four, but you have to get a certain percentage of those four.
Mm-hmm.
And because this existed, and because Canadians therefore started hearing Canadian music, Canadian stars started to emerge, because musicians could afford to stay in the business, and if you've got enough people doing it and making their living doing it, finally those stars will emerge. And that's why people like Katie Lang and Joni Mitchell and Randy Bachman and Leonard Cohen and came out of the fog. They wouldn't have existed unless this support had been there. That never happened with film.
It didn't happen at the multiplexes.
The movie theaters weren't forced to show the Canadian movies. So any kind of small Canadian movie that might have emerged, like you saw emerge out of Australia, didn't happen. And we became the service guys for the American, for Hollywood. And therefore, we became Hollywood North rather than Canada, and we were producing Meatballs, and as you said, instead of some small movie that might in some way tell the story of who we are, and not in an earnest way, but in a fictional way, the way movies can do that.
I would say, how big of an impact were the tax shelter films of the 70s and 80s? Or was there
while the government realized they had to do something to support movies, they went at it that way instead of the distribution. And so if you invested in a movie, you got to deduct it from your income tax. So everybody was making – you could make these $10,000 investments in a movie, and in the first year you get to write off $7,000, and the second year you got to write off another $7,000, and therefore you got your money back without the movie having to make money. And what happened is nobody cared what movies they were making. They just cared that they got these – that movies were being made you could invest in. And the emphasis became on the – went on the deal rather than on the film itself. And so lots of movies were made while these tax shelters were going, but they were movies that nobody wanted to see.
Well, I actually wound up seeing a few of those as a kid. And I know – I think it was discovered in 1979 that more than half of the 66 Canadian-produced films weren't even released.
But they made investors very happy because they got their tax credits. Well, it's a very interesting to compare the different attempts at government trying to manipulate public policy in order to affect the artistic world and to try and support the artistic world, and how it succeeded in the music industry in creating this homegrown music industry, and how it's also succeeded in the film industry, because there is a vibrant film industry in Canada, but it isn't telling our stories. It's servicing Hollywood as opposed to telling the Canadian story. And when you listen to, when you listen to Joni Mitchell, when you listen to The Band, when you listen to Leonard Cohen, you can tell they're deeply involved with their Canadian roots. They're and are reflecting the country in some way, but the films aren't.
I think of a couple directors, and you mentioned earlier there's a number of actors and directors and producers who, originally are from Canada and then moved to the United States. And, everybody from Ivan Reitman to David Cronenberg. But two directors I think of, if you want to have a Canadian director, I think of Adam McGoyan and Guy Madden. How are they? Are they looked upon regarded highly in Canada?
Well, they're regarded highly by critics,
right?
And they're regarded highly by film festivals, but their films aren't in wide distribution across the country. Those guys are not making films that would necessarily
Open in 3,000 screens.
No, they're making more idiosyncratic and many would say interesting films, but they're not making those. You see, that's what we've got. We've got, and on the other end of the spectrum, James Cameron, who made Avatar and Titanic, the two largest grossing films in history. He's a Canadian, but he's not making Canadian stories. So we have both ends of the spectrum covered. We've got the guys who've developed through the Hollywood studio end of things, and we've got the artistic small film being made, but we don't have the guys in the middle, the men or the women in the middle of the road making, or in the middle of the pack, making small popular movies that reflect our story.
So we're not going to have James Cameron doing a film version of the Trailer Park Boys.
Well, he might, but it'll be a toss off. It'll be something that he does at some point in his career to because his conscience is nagging him.
Right. Are you familiar with a website called Canucksploitation?
No, I'm not.
It's a guide to the B movies from Canada from like the 50s through the 90s.
And no, that sounds like fun.
Well, it is, because I was going through some of these, and as a kid, I saw some of these films in theaters, saw them on video, saw them in on cable, and only as I got older and more into this business, I found out that it was a Canadian-made film. Films like the original Black Christmas, which I know is a cult classic for horror fans, The Changeling, The Brood. Obviously, a lot of these are horror films, but films like Space Hunter, Adventures in the Forbidden Zone, I remember seeing that as a kid. Even in my hometown of Flint, Michigan, we got The Gray Fox, the Richard Farnsworth Western, which I thought was just fantastic.
And now, that was a great movie, and that was well seen across Canada. Mm-hmm. And that's the exception that proves the rule. That's that's the sort of film that I'm talking about that we should be making more of.
And a film like Black Robe, which did a better version of the Dances with Wolves story. So, Stuart, I'm curious, do you get to see any movies when you're on the road, and how often do you get to see stuff at home when you're at home?
These days, first off, do I get to see movies on the road? Never. Occasionally we have a night off, but usually if we have a day off between shows, it's a travel day, and we're moving from one place to the other, and we'll be on the bus for 10 hours. And by the time you come to the hotel, if you've been traveling on the bus all day, the idea of going and sitting in a movie theater just isn't what I feel like anyway. You tend to just want to settle down in your room and read or go for a walk. At home, I'm a writer these days, is how I spend most of my time, and I seem to always be on a deadline, which is a writer's best friend. I'm not complaining about being on a deadline. I think when people ask me about what's my advice to being a better or being a writer, I always say find yourself a deadline, because it's what will make you sit down in your chair and get writing. And a deadline can be anything. It can be an assignment from somebody. It can be a creative writing class. It can be a writing group. Whatever it is, it just has to be something that forces you to produce. So I find that I'm spending a lot of my time producing. I did, however, for Christmas, make my sons a little book this year, where I sent them a book with my favorite movies of all time, and with a little explanation as to what each movie was and why it was important to me. And so I have been thinking about the films of my life and realized during the exercise that movies had been more important to me than I thought.
Can you give me a sample?
Gee, now I got to. I thought to myself, oh, I could have. I'll open my mouth. I'm going to have to
say something.
Say them. Well, my favorite movie of all time was Lawrence of Arabia. That was on the list of 10. There was a movie called The Flim Flam Man
with George C. Scott. Yeah,
you know it.
Oh yeah, yeah, con artist film.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I was a bit of a con artist myself as a young guy, and it was. I think that movie resonated with me. In a big way, because I'm so impressed that you know it, because I went to see it without knowing what it was about, and that and it just had this great. It spoke to me, and it was about a con artist who took a young lad under his wings and taught him the game. And I desperately wanted to be that young boy.
I had a similar feeling, and this is another example of I saw the film not knowing it was a Canadian film, but enjoyed it nonetheless. Was The Apprenticeship of Duddy Kravitz?
No, I haven't seen
Richard
that
Dreyfuss.
One.
Yeah, and I know the author of that film had another one of his books was made into a movie last year, Barney's Version.
Yes, that's right. Another one of Richler's book was made into.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a Barney's Version is a great book, and that I haven't. I'm looking forward to seeing that movie. I haven't seen that. Seen it yet.
I haven't read it, but I thought Giamatti was excellent in it, and I really, really enjoyed it. In fact, it looked like something Richard Dreyfuss or Dustin Hoffman would have starred in 40 years ago.
Well, that's great to hear. It's a great book, actually. It's if you feel like a read, but I'm glad to hear the film's good, but the book was great, too.
Cool. I'll be on the lookout for it. Now, you were going to say something.
Oh, I was thinking of the other films. Another one that was on my list, and these were not films that I put on the list because they were necessarily great movies, but because they spoke to me in a important way at a different, you know, different parts of my life. Mm-hmm. Another one was a little documentary. We're talking about documentaries made in the '60s out of California called Skater Dater, which is a 12-minute movie with no dialogue, which actually I learned later as I was kind of researching the thing to tell my boys about it. Either won or was nominated for an Oscar as the documentary of the year, and it was a piece about little boys learning how to skateboarding in somewhere in California, and then one of them seeing a girl on a bicycle and being diverted to her as he grew, you know, as his loyalty to the group of skateboarders was challenged by the pretty blonde thing on the bicycle. It was a lovely little movie, and I just watched it the other day. It's very fun. It's a fun exercise to go through, to try and go through the movies of your life and choose 10 which are the movies of your life that spoke to you in some way. And then to find them. It's hard to find these films.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I mean, with the Canucksploitation website, yeah, a lot of these films are not on DVD. I think part of it is maybe who owns the rights to what and how do you convert them. But, yeah, there's still a number of films, no matter where they're made, that haven't made it to DVD or Blu-ray or online yet. So there is still a bit of a hunting feel, I guess, kind of like going into a record store and looking for an old album that's out of print.
Which makes it all the more fun.
I agree. Yeah, so the search keeps going, I guess.
Well, for me, and that's because I've told them I'll get them all the movies, and I think I've got four or five so far, and I'm looking for having that as a little project and on the back burner is kind of fun.
Well, in baseball, you're doing great.
Well, you're right.
Hey, just curious, what do you think? What are some of the movies Dave and Morley would probably watch?
Well, Dave would probably be watching Meatballs. Proudly, with a Canadian beer in his hand.
Sounds like my college days.
What would Morley be watching?
I mean, do we do standard romantic comedies, or you know, do they have to fight over what they're going to go see, what they're going to watch? Give and take, as a lot of spouses do.
You see, now you've given me some food for thought here. I can't answer it, but I think I'm going to try.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think they would like romantic comedies. I think they, you know, Sleepless in Seattle and what are some of those Hugh Grant movies?
Four Weddings and a Funeral. Love Actually. Yeah, Love Actually was just on cable last night. I think it's on a 24-hour loop. It's law, apparently. Well, Stuart, I really, really appreciate your time. And I guess you always try to get Canadian musicians on your show. I'm waiting for you to put the band Anvil on your show someday.
Okay. I think don't hold your No offense to the band Anvil. I don't even know them. But I fear that just the name sounds like it won't be – they won't – God love them. Won't be on our show.
Canadian metal bands that are in their 50s? No. Well, it was worth a shot.
Well, maybe we could do them unplugged.
Hey, there you go. I mean, it's a really fine, fine documentary. It's called Anvil, The Story of Anvil.
Yeah, I think I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, some people have said if Spinal Tap were real, But it's a sweet story because you have these two, especially the two original members, who have been slugging it out in the music world for over 30 years, and they won't give up. It's very inspiring, but there's a lot of loud music and silliness along the way.
Well, I'll add it to my list.
Hey everyone, this is Tommy Wiseau, and you're listening now to Film Sociology at the WFYI Indianapolis.
Yes, before Tommy, that was Stuart McLean. And you can see Stuart McLean in the Vinyl Cafe this Sunday at 2:30 p.m. at the Hilbert Circle Theater. I should be there, and hopefully you will be too. We're hanging out with Gina and Dan and Kobe, and got some DVD Blu-ray titles to come out. We've still got a couple of minutes left. Apparently the big title, Tron Legacy, which looked great but really took itself way too seriously. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll move on. And because of that, they now have the original Tron, so you can remember how it wasn't nearly as spectacular as you thought it was when you were 13. If you were 13. Shut up, Kobe. Let's see. Also, the Roger Corman's Action Pack Collection featuring Georgia Peaches, Smokey Bites the Dust, and the Great Texas Dynamite Chase. 70s B-movie drive-in fare, Kobe.
Different time.
Also on Blu-ray, we have The People vs. Larry Flint. I enjoyed that. Fiddler on the Roof, for you musical fans out there. The Chronicles of Narnia 3, Voyage of Dawn Treader.
And mine just showed up today. I didn't have time to look at the features.
That's all right. It'll be there. I Love You, Philip Morris, the gay romantic comedy with Jim Carrey and Ewan McGregor, which is not hella bad.
That's right.
It wasn't snoozable.
Because of the release of Arthur, the remake, they have now put the original and the sequel, Arthur 2 on the Rocks, on Blu-ray.
More bang for your buck.
Just watch the one. Also out on Blu-ray, AI, Artificial Intelligence, Steven Spielberg finishing Stanley Kubrick's work. And Justice for All, really fine legal drama starring Al Pacino in his young days, in the early development of screamy Al Pacino. That we all know. And
He's too screamy.
Not in this one. That's pretty good. Arabesque with Sophia Loren and Gregory Peck. And I'm really stoked about this because, as you know, College Report, what was the report? 86% of all college males.
Oh, yeah.
Stoked.
Reportedly get stoked.
Yeah. Taxi Driver is on Blu-ray. The Martin Scorsese, Robert De Niro classic. Remember when Robert De Niro was good? By the way, Little Fockers is on DVD and Blu-ray this week. But go get Taxi Driver instead. So, Gina, once again, where are the matches?
We're going to be at the Forum at Fisher's on 126th Street Saturday night. Doors open at 5. Matches start at 6. Circle City Derby Girls. You can find out more info at CircleCityDerbyGirls.com.
And the website? Haunted Flower.
Oh, and my website is HauntedFlower.com.
Yes. And, Kobe, we will get to your What Is Kobe Watching next week, which will include John Wayne. Will you stop? You're killing me over there. Some John Wayne, maybe The Fighter.
Yeah.
And maybe some Hitchcock.
Yeah.
That's not freaky.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll get to that.
I tried to watch Strangers on a Train last Friday night. I fell asleep.
That's quite okay. Well, you know
what? Not because it was boring, because
you were tired.
Yes.
And, of course, it's going to be a long week starting Monday.
Yeah, so. It's going to be a long 2 weeks.
A long 2 weeks, mm-hmm. I know. And then, the week after, I'll be in Nashville.
Yep.
Doing the film festival thing. Mm-hmm. So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by.
Silent Breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
On behalf of Gina and Dan and Kobe, I'm Matthew Soucy. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. Lynn, I love you. Hope opening night of Major Barbara at Erlen College goes off swimmingly. I'll find out in about an hour and a half. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.